You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
WhamGoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome to this week's episode of the Van Flip Podcast. We are sitting down with Dustin and John of the revitalized Nebraska, originally Nebraska, not sure if you guys still live there, but originally Nebraska-based metalcore metal band Pariah. Welcome to the show, boys.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having us, Lurk.
Thanks for having us, man.
Are you boys still in Nebraska? Is that still where you guys are located, or all over the place?
All over the place.
No. start with Dustin. He was the first one to move away.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I live in Los Angeles now. I've been out here since 2011. So what's that? Almost nearly 12 years now. Oh, cool. I've been out here. Yeah.
I moved out to West Hartford, Connecticut about a year and 2 months ago. So we have about 3,300 miles between us.
Yeah, I mean, this is about as far apart as you can get.
Yeah.
No, it literally is. I think it pretty much is because we're on separate corners of the country. And then two of the other members still live in Omaha. So, I mean, the nice thing about Omaha, Nebraska is it's right in the dead center of the country.
Yeah, travel
I mean, we both meet halfway.
Yeah, traveling is pretty easy. So you guys obviously do a lot of stuff. Well, we'll get into that. I'm jumping the gun. So.
Cool. All right, you're excited.
Yeah, it's fine. I've been waiting, you know. So you guys took a bit of a break, you know. A lot of the younger generation or people that are just getting into, like, heavier music, metalcore, metal, and something like that, they may not know, you know, your history or whatever. So, you know, you guys were around in the early 2000s for quite some time. I mean, I think you toured extensively. You had a couple releases. You know, you were signed, obviously. And then around 2009, around the time I'm assuming you moved out to LA, you guys kind of called it not a day. It never was called a day, but
That's correct.
It took a long time for you guys to come back out into the scene or whatever. So
yeah, and I'm glad you recognize that because a lot of people are kind of like, oh, they broke up and they're back together. It's kind of, you know, we defined it as indefinite hiatus.
Yes.
You know, purposely because we always thought, like, you know, we still get along well. We write good music together. We love each other. We're great friends. Like, you know, if we want to ever just put out another Pariah album in 5 to 10 years or maybe play some shows, it's not like this, like, make-up, break-up type thing constantly. So it's just kind of like, yeah, we'll just go at our own pace at this point, you know, and that could be something. It could be nothing. So, you know, we've done two shows since the indefinite hiatus, just like where we kind of put something together and I fly into town and we make it happen, and it's been fun, you know.
Were those recently, or were those in the span of the last 14 years?
The last one was 2015. Okay. And then I think one before that was 2013. Does that sound right, John?
2014, and we were opening up for a friend's band that the guitar player was my mentor, and he asked us to do this show. And of course, it was like an immediate, well, that's not even possible because logistically, I didn't know how we would do it.
Yeah.
And I just kind of threw a pitch, and everybody was into it. So we put together a show as the opener, and we just announced it like a couple of weeks before. We went on, and we didn't make a big deal of it, but it felt really good, and it felt really organic. So the next show we did was the following year, just before Christmas. And again, we got together with another band who hadn't played in some time. We made a big event out of it, and it felt so good to be together on stage again. It still just wasn't time to make new music together yet. I felt like, personally, I didn't have much to say or to express on my instrument. So it was really about waiting until the creative juices were flowing again.
Mm-hmm.
And something about the coronavirus, if there's any good that came of that, it made me want to play heavy metal again. So here we are.
That's good. That's good.
Pent up energy.
Yeah, a lot of people. Especially,
I would say so.
You know, this isn't a knock or anything, or is not a knock on anything, but I'm sure riding out the pandemic in the middle of the country where, you know, it's already not a lot of population, maybe not a lot of attractions and not a lot of things to do, it probably wasn't as ideal, you know?
Yeah. I feel like you could possibly make an argument that it was maybe better to be in a smaller place like Omaha, because here in LA, like, everything was locked down for so long that when I would go back to Omaha, it would feel like nothing had happened. And here it was like still like no places are open. You gotta, you know, like everyone's gotta be wearing masks and getting tested constantly. And it was like Omaha, it was still just like, now we've been back to normal for 6 months now.
John, it sounds like you were living.
There's definitely some truth to that.
Yeah.
And people in the bigger cities were talking about how everything was just so absolutely shut down. And in Nebraska, there was this eagerness to have shows and restaurants to reopen, and they totally jumped the gun. And for better or worse, I think it was probably a lot easier to live in Omaha during that time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we were already working on our transition to New England, and none of that was happening, and nowhere close to the time frame that it was in Omaha. So, and in the end, maybe it was kind of a blessing in disguise. We did start rehearsing during kind of the, you know, we were probably reckless as we were wearing masks, but we started getting together, I think, I don't even know. It feels so long ago at this point, but that's how we made the time to rehearse. So yeah.
That's cool.
You know, I mean, there's that, and the song just started popping out right away.
That's awesome. That makes it a lot easier. I guess, yeah, I mean, I definitely don't want to talk about COVID anymore because we've talked about it endlessly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sounds like you, John, had the same kind of experience I did. I live in Florida, so, you know, we didn't really have a pandemic or anything down here for the most part, which I guess is fine.
I've been told.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it worked out, I guess, but, you know, here we are today.
Yeah, I mean, we're here, and it's in the rearview mirror, and I agree. I mean, I don't want to harp on it. It meant the rebirth of the band, but it is in the rearview mirror, and I'm just so happy that we can move on and put out an album and look towards playing shows and just move forward.
Yeah, and you guys just dropped just dropped your first single, Venerate, right? Venerate?
Yeah,
yep. You just dropped that this month sometime. So what's the biggest difference you guys feel? Because it's been a while since you've released anything, you know, since, 2009 or something like that. What's the biggest difference between this new single and possibly, you know, whatever else you guys have cooking compared to the previous materials?
Our last album, The Barnacle Cordius, was far more experimental, you know, us kind of like, you know, maybe pushing against the grain of a lot of the metalcore stuff and trying to just do something a little weirder, I think. At least for me, that's kind of where I was pushing it. And this is like, to me, I think our songwriting has really matured and progressed a lot, like for the better. You know, we're not doing as many 8 and 9 minute metal songs anymore. You know, this is like a fucking, you know, 4 minute just headbanger, fist pumping, like, great song, in my opinion, you know. So I just think that the songwriting sounds far more cohesive and put together. And, you know, I'm pretty proud of us for getting to that point.
Yeah, same. I would mirror that. I think that the songs that we're doing now, some would argue that they're more straightforward, and they're not wrong, but to me it sounds more mature. The songs have definitely more direction. There is more repetition. But for the sake of making it more of a traditional song, I think we took...
Hey, what's up? It's Lurk. Looks like you're enjoying the podcast. If you are and you like what we're doing here on The Van Flip, why don't you go ahead and pause this, give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you want to find out any information on your favorite bands from the hardcore and metal scene, visit lambgoat.com. And to stay in the loop about everything that we post on lambgoat.com, make sure you like us on Facebook and you head over to Twitter and Instagram and follow us at lambgoat. Are you a full-grown adult and you also have a TikTok account? Congrats. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can find us under the username lambgoat.com. That's spelled out D-O-T-C-O-M. Head over to our YouTube channel where we have all of these podcasts in video format, plus a lot more content that you should check out. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and you hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new content. And last but not least, if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lurk City. And as always, if you need any of the links that pertain to the artists on the show today, Lambgoat, or myself, you can always find them in the description. Thanks for listening to this message. Now let's get back to the show.
More influence from the original era of American thrash metal. That was certainly my influence this time around. It wasn't about the number of changes and, you know, making awkward time signatures for the sake of being, you know, creative with it. And I'm not, you know, bad-mouthing anything we did in the past, but I definitely had a very, very different approach. This time, I really just wanted to write some bangers and not out to prove anything anymore. You know, this is a completely different headspace. The heavy metal scene is so different. I think it's more receptive to classic thrash metal than ever, which has much to do with why I personally thought this was the time to come back.
Hmm. When is the EP set to release? I don't know if we have that information yet.
Yeah, so we're kind of like trickling this release.
Okay.
We're going to really milk it.
Yeah. But, well, you've been away for a while, so you have the ability to do so, I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, John.
Well, I was going to say, we don't have a full length. You know, we're going to probably end up with 6 or 7 songs. So, and what bands seem to be doing now is just releasing them over the course of a couple months with videos. So that's our intention. And when the entire thing comes out as a package, at least as a digital package, I don't know. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Yeah, we're kind of like, to kind of, like you said, is like trickling it out, doing a music video with each song. That's the plan. And yeah, once it's all done, it'll be, you know, one cohesive album once we've released everything one at a time. Because, you know, we've spent a lot of time working on these, so we kind of like don't want to just like throw it all out and have people kind of gloss over it. It's like, we'll really give each song like, you know, it's time to shine and push it and hope people give it the attention that you know, we think it deserves. You know, and then at the end, whether we press something physically or not is still sort of up in the air. So kind of see how the reception is over the next few months to all these songs and, you know, change course from there.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan. Like, again, that's probably the best way to do it in this day and age with, you know, streaming and everything like that, and just with everyone having that 7-second Vine mentality, attention span, you know, it's probably better that you also, you know, release stuff stagnantly. That way it stays more in the front of someone's mindset or mind. But yeah, I mean, so let's get into, you know, the gap. Because like the last thing that we posted about you guys on the website was in 2008, 2009. And like, you know, like we said, there wasn't necessarily like a big announcement about, hey, the band's breaking up and, you know, all this, the other stuff. But what kind of led to the infinite hiatus that you guys kind of took?
I can tell you, for me personally, I was kind of like unsure about where we fit into the heavy music scene at that time. I felt like the deathcore sound had really taken center stage, and lots of great stuff. I didn't know where we fit into that creatively, and not having a niche, and also maybe a little bit of burnout from doing that style of music for so long. I was really, really anxious to prove myself in other styles of music, and maybe some of that angst that drove me in those first two albums didn't exist like it did. So I felt making heavy music, at least at that time in my life, felt contrived. And it was, I would rather do something honest than go up there and fake it, because people can tell when you go on stage and you don't have the same aggression and you're not hungry like you were, it comes off very watered down. And frankly, I guess I didn't have anything to say on my guitar at that point. And then with Dustin moving to LA, it was just the perfect time to explore other things. And like Dustin said, it was always clear. And I think that we were all on the same page with, let's leave the motor idling. And when the time comes, because, I mean, they're my brothers. I love playing with those guys. I'm so blessed that we had the experience of touring together and actually doing it with friends and not having to recruit people from, you know, that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we did at one point, so just to be clear, you know, there was some bit of that, but in the end, it was the core four guys and same boys that we got, you know, doing it this time.
Same lineup, the same core four.
Same core.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like we've had a couple, you know, other dudes that have been in and out of the band for short periods or even longer periods of time. But yeah, this was kind of the core four. We could call it that, I guess. I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd say the four horsemen, but that stands for another band. So. Metallica.
Yeah. When we were leading up to this, I was thinking, because I used to be in a really crappy band that toured and played here in town a lot too, and I want to say one of those shows was with you guys, but I'm not 100% sure. So let me see if I can look that up. We don't need to say that out loud, but let me see.
No, I want to hear your band name.
I know, I do too. I mean, now I'm super curious. Oh, I remember it was in Florida then, right?
It was in Jacksonville, yeah. So it would have been at the Imperial in Jacksonville.
That Ooh. Sounds really familiar to me.
That does sound familiar.
Yeah.
We did go to...
Were we playing with Into the Moat?
Yeah, we were definitely in Florida.
Oh,
with
here
Into
it is right here. November 19th, 2004, the Imperial.
Hey, which was it? Into the Motors? That would have been
I don't know. It doesn't say. This is Setlist FM I'm looking up. So, but yeah, we, okay, my band's name was She Dies in December. So, yeah.
I think that sounds familiar. I've done a really thorough job of trying to save flyers from every show I've ever played.
Oh, no, it might have been Psyopus. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, we were touring Psyopus at that time.
Yeah, so we definitely played that show because I remember Psyopus being. I remember opening for Psyopus too. So yeah, that was.
Album came out that year. Misanthropos came out November 2nd of 2004, and we had our album release show in Omaha with Psyopus, and that was like our tour kickoff show. And we were with them like that entire month, so the timeline definitely adds up. And I know we went to Florida too.
Oh yeah, no, I just looked it up on the database of Lamb Goat tour dates. So yeah, it was 2004.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 2004. You were here on the 19th of November, and you guys.
The name of that venue is very, very familiar, and we were with Psyopus. Then there was definitely some crazy zany shit that went on that night. That was bollocks. For that entire tour, there were so many wild, bizarre, and amazing memories with that band.
Yeah,
yeah,
they were so much older than us. We were all teenagers, and they were like 30 something.
Yeah, yeah, we were really, we were really
it was
young.
Quite
too.
An experience.
Yeah, we were pretty young there too, and we were the band covering the Britney Spears song. So if you if you remember that bullshit,
which one?
Toxic.
Oh.
We did that one before that heavy. I don't know if it's Dimmu Borgir or some other like. Black death metal band covered it, like some European Scandinavian band covered it, and then like a Static Lullaby covered it. But that happened like I should probably clarify, because a lot of people were like, oh, cover songs, they weren't like that, they weren't popping off back in the early 2000s. It was like it was like Throwback had Baby Got Back, and then that was like basically the catalyst.
I have
for
that
us.
Album that's on.
Oh yeah,
it's like a hardcore does rap or something like that.
Yeah, it was before like, and again, we didn't have like pop or you know like punk goes pop or anything like that. We didn't have those albums that like those series of albums at the time. It was literally just like I think the B side on that Throwdown CD or EP or C, you know, whatever.
Oh.
And we had an idea of like, well, we had a show. We had to play like that week, and we didn't have enough songs, so we were like, let's just cover a song. And you know, that Britney Spears song at the time was like the biggest thing, so we were like, can we make this like the Throwdown song? And we did. And then that was probably like a bad idea, because that's all everyone fucking knew us about or knew from us.
Yeah.
But you know,
that's
it is
funny.
What it is.
I know you're not going to play it on the podcast, but send me a copy of that. I want to hear it.
Yeah, I'm not going to play it on the podcast.
Well, on the subject of Psyopis, I can kind of tie that into our Venerate video.
Okay.
With Psyopis, we had kind of this history of pranking each other constantly on the tour. You know, it'd just be things like jumping up on stage with each other and throwing shit at the other members when they were on stage or something, but like really playfully, you know, never like malicious or anything. Like, didn't we get them with Silly String a bunch of times and just silly shit like that?
Whenever they would upstage us, it was always a little bit more aggressive, but definitely playful.
So
we would get them with Silly String and they'd get us back with like flour.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. So like on the tour we did with them, like we had the last laugh, and then, you know, like this was probably a year later, maybe more. We were booked on this 2-day Milwaukee Metal Fest thing or something. I think it was called like Watch the World Explode Fest. It was in Madison or Milwaukee or something. Anyway, you know, we saw the 2-day lineup. They were on the day before, we were on the next day, and you know, we were just like, oh man, it sucks that we're not going to see them or whatever. You know, so we set up, we're playing our set, and then all of a sudden in the middle of our set we start getting just bombed with, like, we don't even really know what it is, and then out comes the Psyopis dudes once from all the cloud. They had tied up all these, well, first of all, they skipped their show the next night. They canceled their
show. They canceled the show.
They missed a show so they could prank us. And so in the middle of our set, they had made these, like, they filled paper towels with glitter and flour and tied them together with like ribbon or something. And they'd spent like the entire day doing it, planning to get us, and just like pelted us with them. So in our Venerate video, where you could have all these like throwback, you know, clips of us from the early 2000s, there is one shot of, I think it's me just like being like, what is going on? And kind of dodging it. And there's just, it looks like smoke everywhere. That was Psyopis.
Yeah, it does.
Well, at least it was.
Yeah, I got pelted in the face.
Go ahead.
It was like, he had like a, I don't, Dustin, what you described, I was never really clear on that. All I know is I got hit on the side of the face, and it, like, I felt like I had been punched, which is not abnormal, you know, when you played a show on the floor in those days. But this felt very intentional and very direct. And then I realized that there was white shit everywhere.
Yeah.
And then my ears are like immediately ringing from it, on top of the fact that I'm playing in a metal band on the floor, like in a warehouse. And I looked around, and like Dustin said, it looked like smoke. And it was just chaos because everybody was apparently in on it, and we were completely aloof. So, and luckily, we got it all on videotape.
Yeah,
and, it was a really, really fun, bizarre show from that point on. And I don't remember where we were in the set, but I feel like they got us pretty early.
Mm. Yeah,
there was a lot of fumbling around with like flour on my headstock for the rest of that show.
I also remember we were playing on a tile floor, and it was so
slippery
after that. Like, you couldn't just stand. Yeah. Like, your feet would just slide because it was caked in flour. So, so that's a little spot in our Venerate video, if you can find it.
Little Easter egg.
Little Easter egg.
Did you guys continue playing while you're getting pelted with this stuff, or, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's back in the day.
My memory. Yeah. I think that there is a video of it on YouTube. Like, the full video is.
Cool. Yeah, that's definitely like a nod to like back in the day, not caring, because obviously like there wasn't a lot of like, you know, if you were to do that now in today's climate, that, you know, people would freak out.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, this was in the era of the youth cruise, you know. Yeah. So when I first got hit in the face, I think part of me was afraid that we were getting jumped. But then when I immediately realized that this was a prank and not like a terrorist attack, I think that we smiled and laughed and continued the song. And then there was hugs and high fives, and then we finished the set.
Yeah,
I hung out with him after that, and Chris Arp gave us the story about them canceling a show, and I was like, wow.
That's dedication, man.
It made my heart warm, knowing that it meant that much to them to one-up us on the prank.
Yeah, they forewent, like, their entire evening and probably, like, pay or whatever that may be at the time.
Oh, but, I know. mean,
disappointed fans in another city.
Just to fuck with you, yeah.
And hilarious. Probably the next day had a, you know, twice as long drive to get to the next destination. But then I remember looking up from it and seeing, like, Adam and Chris, like, from Psyopis just, like, pointing and laughing at us, and I was just like, oh my god. But then I do remember after that we went to okay, now I'm remembering a little more. It was in Madison, Wisconsin, and we went to this, it used to be a church, but people just lived in it now. Okay, yeah. So it was like 11.
It was like a college dorm.
Basically, yeah. It was like college kids all living in there. And so since it used to be a church, it had this giant open living room. So we all went there to, and we played another show there after that at, like, you know, 1 a.m.
Yeah.
With Psyopis.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. That's, like, really DIY. We've got some
photos and videos from that, too, and it's, like, it was, like, just, like, a total party environment. Like, I think the drummer from Psyopis played with a beer box on his head or something, you know, silly like that.
That is that's some definitely, like, old school kind of vibes.
Yeah.
So, a lot of community. I mean, especially up in that area, we played so many amazing shows, and I know we played in that church. It was like where the, you know, the worship would have been, you know, this big, like, pit area right in the center, and then we would have shows and just get trashed on beer and party all night.
It was crazy how that used to work back in the day. A lot of, like, venues were churches of some kind, you know? Like, there weren't really a lot of venues that were dealing with, like, hardcore and metalcore and metal and all that stuff, so, like, you know, the kids were booking shows wherever they could, and it just happened to be a lot of, you know, church or...
Oh, yeah. Venues. Oh, you're talking churches when churches were still actually, like, places of worship, and then we'd have a show.
Yeah,
we definitely did that, too. That was a thing.
We did a lot of American mission halls, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, Knights of Columbus and American Legion halls.
Yeah, VFWs.
Church mess halls. Pretty much any place that did not have a stage or a PA, and you were guaranteed to play on the floor, which was amazing, and I missed that a lot. That was such an awesome experience. I mean, there's something about having stage lights and monitors and, like, a front of the house sound guy and all that fun stuff, but there's much to be said about just throwing down on the floor.
Yeah, I think the bands like that. I don't know if the fans necessarily like that.
I don't know.
Well, so, like,
I would get excited about seeing big bands.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, when let me give you a common example of the 2004 era when bands like Bleeding Through and Darkest Hour and Unearth, and this is probably more like 2003, but when those bands were on the rise, they were still playing clubs for 80 to 100 people, and I could see them on the floor. They toured through the Midwest, and they almost always played on the floor somewhere, and those were such more memorable experiences.
Yeah.
And I felt like the bands had more fun with it, too.
It does feel, or it is more intimate for sure. But, you know, just as far as, like, if you're in the back of the room, you're not seeing a lot.
Yeah.
And then you're not hearing a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially if you're short.
Sucks, and that's about it.
Yeah. Like, I literally went to a show last night that was on the floor. And it's like a long hall kind of venue. And, yeah, the people in the back are just back there like, you know, I'm hearing some stuff, but you know, but it was a crazy, like, and that particular show was like a crazy show, pretty violent. You know, like, the mosh pit was just, it's not, I mean, it might be like, God, 12 to 15 feet wide. That's about it. And they were just like, and half of that, or, you know, like, a good 3 feet of that is like a bar where that, like, the sound guy was on, and, like, I was standing on the videotape and stuff. And it was a very violent, nutty show. So, yeah. You know, it might have been dangerous for the band too, because, like, they're in the mix, you know. They could get moshed on. And then...
Yeah, it's true.
We definitely did. I mean, I've been run over more than once. And Dustin, do you remember that show somewhere in the Carolinas? We played this house, and there was just hundreds of kids there, and they put us in the smallest room, and everybody was just shoved in there. So we're packed in like sardines, and then the minute we started playing, it was the most crazy throwdown mosh pit. And we all got hit in the head several times. And it was... You remember this place? It was hot as fuck that day. It was super, super...
I don't.
Super humid.
I mean, I have, like, big memories of a lot of those places that all kind of blurred together for me at this point. So like that one specifically, I don't recall.
Yeah, I'm not great at remembering a lot of places. Dustin's kind of a scrapbooker. He's got all of these pictures and flyers, and you always remember people's names. I wish I could maintain half of that information. But it's coming back.
I could forget your name like on the podcast and then be like, oh no, you know? It's one of those things.
I forgot what I had for breakfast, man. I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
I have like selective memory, though. It's like there's lots of things from that era that I remember really specifically, but then like sometimes like I'll chat with my parents on the phone or whatever and they'll be like, how was your weekend? And I'm like, I can't remember when the weekend was, you know? And it's not because
runs together.
Yeah, it's not because I'm like wasted or anything. It's just like I just can't remember what I did 3 days ago.
Yeah. This time, speaking of that, like remembering what day it is. I got a noise going on in here. Anyway, this time change is really fucking me up. Like, I don't even know what day it is. And my sleep schedule is so jacked. Like, so jacked. I went to bed at, like, 7 the other day, and I was up at, like, 10, you know. And I'm on that weird schedule because I got to keep the news moving on the website.
You're on the 24-hour news cycle, man.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like that. So I really can't wait till we get rid of all the time change shit and we just adopt what like Iowa does or something like that, you know?
Oh yeah, it's like
Indiana, sorry.
No, it's Arizona.
I think there's multiple states that do it, but
that don't change the time?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was only Arizona.
You may be right, but Indiana did it too. I mean, there's multiple ones, but we need to adopt it all together. Like I'm done with this.
I agree. We're not going to do it. Oh, Hawaii, too, doesn't change.
Well, yeah, they don't. No need to. They're way out there.
Yeah.
You were talking about youth crews earlier, John. Did you ever have, like, run-ins with those boys? FSU, DMS?
I'm sorry, say it again.
You brought up youth crews in one of the last statements. Did you guys ever have run-ins with any of those guys, like the FSU guys or DMS?
No,
or
we didn't. As a band, it probably would have been better if we did, because there was like a lot of bands getting beat up on stage at that time, and they were getting great press for it. Like one of them was this band called From a Second Story Window.
Yeah.
And they were on the same label with us, as was Psyopus. And we went out on the road with them right after, I think, Dustin, if I recall, is right after the Psyopus tour. And they were all beat up. They had black eyes, and they were scratched up and beat up. You recall that?
Yeah, I do. I totally forgot about that until you mentioned it. Yeah.
They played some venue, I believe it was in Illinois, and the singer, I guess the venue, the promoter was already in hot water because they were having all of these shows and the place was getting torn up. So they prefaced it with all of the bands that, hey, you know, we're under the magnifying glass, so we need to really play it safe tonight. And I guess when From a Second Story Window was on stage, the vocalist ended up, you know, stage diving, and then he kicked out like a ceiling tile. Obviously not even on purpose. That's just what you do. And the crew jumped the entire band right away and like jumped them for real. These guys were beat up and they got tons of write-ups over it, and people were giving them food and money and extra care, as they should. But we were like terrified. Like, what are we gonna do? These guys carry brass knuckles, and their whole thing is about beating people up, and that is just not us. I mean, we're like, we were just little metal kids, just there to have a good time. I did not know what we were gonna do to contend with that.
Yeah,
and I still have never been in a real fight in my life. I've been in like a little like couple scuffles in high school or whatever, but nothing I would consider a fight. And at this point, I'm 40 years old, so the odds of me getting in a fight are getting slimmer.
I think,
at least, you know.
I feel the same way. The last, like, fight I was probably in was probably in elementary to middle school or something like that, but I've definitely gotten crowd killed very recently, so I'm fully familiar with, you know, physical pain and getting, you know, attacked, or not attacked, but, you know.
Yeah.
Getting.
I mean, for me, on top of being, like, a fairly peaceful guy, I'm just not a big person, so I just know that like I wouldn't win a fight, you know.
So
I'm certainly gonna avoid it for me, you know.
Yeah, a lot of hair pulling.
Yeah, I can always. I'd have to resort to getting strapped because I don't have the size advantage. You know,
a lot of open palm slap.
Yeah, slap,
yeah.
Slap.
Yeah. So you know, speaking
so
like,
suffice to say, we're not tough guys.
No, I get it. Metal, you know, usually metal bands aren't necessarily tough guys. They just kind of look it from the exterior, and then they like, you know,
yeah,
like
usually, you know, usually they're teddy bears, they're lovers.
You got Corpse Grinder out here just looking like
of the, time.
The most brutal front man, but goes and plays claw machines and likes big stuffed animals, you know, and plays World of Warcraft endlessly. So, you know,
he's all about the kids.
Oh yeah,
he donates all those animals to child shelters and stuff, and he's definitely a family man.
Big softy guy.
That's true about metal people are the best. There's no two ways about it. I feel like some of the most loyal, honest, lovable people are from the metal community, and part of the reason I want to come back to it.
Yeah, let's talk about that then, because you're not the only ones. You know what I mean? It seems like we're on this 20-year cycle of, and I'm not complaining about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like we're on this 20-year cycle of all these, like, very paramount albums or paramount band. You know, like, and again, we've been in this little window for a while because, you know, 2000s, early, late 90s to now and stuff. There's 20-year albums or 20-year reunions and 20-year album tours going on all the time. But, yeah, you know, I didn't ever think, you know, at the time that we played together or when I was in a band early 2000s, you know, my dad was always like, you know, this music isn't going to stay, you know, it's not going to be around for a long time like old rock and roll was because it's just, you know, one thing or another. And, you know, yeah. Part of me felt that way too because I was like, there isn't really a big audience. And this was all pre-internet like it is now. You know, we had MySpace for that little window, and that was definitely beneficial for all of us, you know, because
sure.
The music side of MySpace was insanely helpful. But I just lost my train of thought. But yeah, no, okay, yeah, longevity in the music scene. It's been crazy as it's gone on, though, how like, oh, man, you know, bands like, well, unfortunately, Every Time I Die is no longer around, but like bands like Every Time I Die and, you know, some of those bands that just kept staying the course, they just kind of paved away a little bit and just kind of, you know, because when you guys bowed out around, you know, 2010, like you were saying, deathcore was coming around and that was its first initial, you know, wave of popularity, and then that kind of fell off. But I also felt like metalcore fell off a little bit within that realm too, because and metal and
the world. Oh, yeah,
totally did.
Because I think it got too popular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it got too popular within that time frame. MTV started picking it up. Not like just the videos, but they would like place their songs in like Real World or other shows and stuff like that. You would hear, you know, all these other bands that normally wouldn't be on like Road Rules or Real World or any of those programs. But
it wasn't the secret society that, you know, a lot of kids signed up for initially to be a part of the quote unquote underground, the scene and all of that. Maybe when it became more of an Ozfest culture. By 2006 and 2007, you know, Warped Tour and the Monster Energy Drink Tour and Ozfest specifically was like racked up with all of these metalcore bands. So I think the new metal kids from the generation before started to pick up on that. And then it wasn't like our best kept secret anymore. And I don't want to say that really had anything to do with me losing my inspiration. It had just kind of, I think that it accomplished what it set out to do, and it was due for a reset.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so many great deathcore bands, and I don't want to dog on it, but I couldn't be a part of that. And it doesn't mean, you know, we couldn't continue doing what we were doing. I just didn't really feel inspired at that point. And I knew that it would come back, and I never stopped listening to metal.
Yeah.
Metal guitar is the best.
I'd also say too is like we would get in that era too, to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, is like some of the types of shows or the venues or the festivals that we would play, when we would go back and play them, they were like all, you know, they were mostly metalcore bands and maybe hardcore bands, and then when they became mostly deathcore bands, it's just like there wasn't a lot of interest in us anymore either. Yeah. So that wasn't
an
inspiring thing to be like, let's go back to the places that we always do well at. And then like people are just kind of like, oh, this band's boring. Or I mean, that's an exaggeration, obviously. Right.
It's too much going on. Where's the blast beats?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that did push us to be in a little bit more of an experimental direction because, you know, for me, I was kind of like, well, like, I just want to keep doing different things and pushing myself to both like creative limits and also like technical things too. Is like, that was a big thing for us, was just doing stuff that's going to make us different. You know, I just never want to be like a run of the mill type band or a run of the mill type person, you know? Yeah. So.
Very true. Very true. I mean, it was just a different time. It's much to do with coming of age. You know, we're all turning, we're all in our late 20s. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I'm still enough in touch with myself from when I was 27 to know that I needed to reinvent myself and, wanted to prove that I could do other things on guitar, because to that point I was only ever approached to do like technical heavy metal stuff. And I mean, I was so proud of what we had done in Pariah, but I didn't really know where to go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really kind of a bummer because, you know, again, I think my, when I crossed over from nu metal, it was more of the metalcore. Yeah, I know. It's cool to say now, but it
when
wasn't
you say
back
crossed
then.
Over, you mean that period of time where you didn't listen to nu metal, but you're back to nu metal now, right?
No, I am back to nu metal.
Because we all are.
100 million percent.
Okay, good.
We're talking 20-year cycles here. You know what I'm saying? And that.
Oh yeah, yeah. No doubt.
No, but I've never stopped listening.
I just want to be transparent.
No, I never stopped listening to it either. I just hid it from the world. You know, I locked the door and then put on some Limp Bizkit or something like that. But no, I mean. When I crossed over into that, you know, the scene world, quote unquote scene, it was like Hatebreed's Perseverance album and then like Glassjaw's Everything You Want to Know About Silence. Those two albums there basically like opened up a different world for me. And then I fell into the whole metalcore world, right? And then that I was really into metalcore. Like I wasn't super into hardcore. I liked hardcore, but it was more of like, it just seemed, and this is going to sound bad, but it seemed like too simple for me, because it was just very easy chugga chugga and
breakdowns.
And I didn't like punk music. I grew up listening to a couple punk music bands because I live near a beach in Florida, and so there's like, you know, I don't know, like weird punk kids all over here skating around and stuff. But I didn't really gravitate towards that. It was more the metalcore side, like you said, Unearth and all those kinds of bands that like Bleeding Through, Every Time I Die, all this, Poison the Well, those were like, that was my wheelhouse. And so
that when Hellfest 1 DVD.
Oh yeah.
But when I gotta take a quick restroom break.
Go ahead.
I'll be right back.
Pee. Yeah. But when you keep going, when it kept going, you know, there was clean singing starts coming into the mix, you know? Like an overly used amount of clean singing starts coming into the mix. Oh, these albums are getting like really produced now. Like it's starting to get some major, not major label money, but labels that had a couple dollars to spend on this stuff were spending it now. And
yeah,
labels started changing.
Yeah, that evolution, they were going for numbers. And by 2005 and 6, you know, metalcore had turned into this heavy production, and labels like Roadrunner were picking up the bands like Killswitch Engage.
Yeah.
And, you know, no diss on Killswitch. I mean, they're legendary, but they kind of, to me, they're the band that maybe the flagship for that era of metalcore, where the production level was just so high and the commercial, you know, the commerciality, if that's even a word,
marketability.
Of the sound proved itself. Marketability, yeah. And they proved that it was marketable.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're an example of one of the bands that, you know, maintained through all of the changes and the reemergence of nu metal. And I feel like we're in that right now.
Oh, yeah.
At least in some form, I think that nu metal has made a pretty strong comeback. I think they're taking more cues from that first wave of nu metal when the sound was fresh and complex and dynamic. And I think we're referring to the same nu metal bands that we probably grew up on, because our journey was very much the same. I burned through so many copies of that Glassjaw album. I thought they were so incredible.
It's my all-time favorite band.
I still do.
It's still my all-time favorite band.
Oh, that is one of the most dynamic albums I've ever heard. It's got everything. You know, it's beautiful. It's melancholy. It's heavy as hell. It's got hardcore songs on it. Mm-hmm. They were at a level that I just strived to be that, you know. And never taking too many cues from their sound, because we didn't have the parts and the players to do what they did musically. But yeah, they were a huge inspiration. And you know, I've gone out of my way to see that band many times.
I have flown multiple states to see that band. I've done stupid things. So I totally know where you're coming from. It's a cult, and I'm fully part of the cult. You know what I mean? I got memorabilia that's so stupid. But
I mean, talk about waiting patiently. I mean, there's bands that made us wait, but they would tease new music for like 10 years at a time.
Oh yeah,
or at least it felt that way. You know, they had that EP that came out after Worship and Tribute, and then I want to say it was a good 6 to 8 years before we got it.
The other EP came out. Yeah, it's just like fuck. Yeah.
Was that the one with the John Lennon song? That first song that had the ride symbol that went on for like two minutes.
Yeah, Our Color Green was the one you're referring to that came after Worship and Tribute. Like I don't know, 5-6 years after that. But Coloring Book was the more. Yeah. Coloring Book had.
Yeah,
5 or 6 songs, and the front half were one style, and the second half was a more melodic, lower toned kind of sound. But and then you know, Material Control came out in 2017-18 or something like that. So
yeah, fairly recently.
Definitely love that.
Yeah, and if I'm being honest, I think I slept on that one a little bit, but those first two albums were groundbreaking for me. So. Kudos and respect to Glassjaw.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, you mentioned the new metal resurgence in like our wheelhouse, like our genres.
Yeah.
I talk about that all the time because I think what is going on is like, we were kids when all that stuff was coming around, like Korn, Rage Against the Machine, Limp Bizkit, all those pioneer new metal bands. Our parents weren't listening to that, so that was us finding it. Some of us, had kids really early on, and a lot of that attributes to why bands are coming back around now and why you start seeing 40-year-old or, 35 to 40-year-old people that you haven't seen in 20 years come to shows again. So, their kids are older and
they're
out of the house and they don't have that responsibility or as much of a responsibility anymore. But those kids, too, that grew up in that household listen to new metal because if your dad and mom are riding around and they're bumping like Korn and you're 5 years old, it's seeping in one way or the other, and that's like the Led Zeppelin for you. Or I don't want to compare, Korn is not the same as Led Zeppelin, but I was riding around, my dad's listening to Led Zeppelin or some shit,
Well, for the new metal movement, I think Korn is Led Zeppelin for new metal.
Right, I just didn't want to. They're not on the same level. They're not on the same level.
Yeah. Band, I mean, what they meant for the movement at the time and in its place. Yeah, I mean, they're one of the originators, so to speak. So
that genre.
Yeah, to pick up on what you're saying, like as far as becoming parents, we're all too happy to share this stuff with our kids because it made up so much of our own. I don't want to say childhood. I mean, this music came into my life when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But if my kids show the slightest amount of interest for any of it, I'm all too happy to show them videos and let them know that I was a part of it in some way, and I took a ton of pride in it. And I feel like I was there early enough. I mean, that's a whole other conversation of like, when's the first wave of metalcore and all that. I guess for me, maybe that was in the late 90s when Until Your Heart Stops, by Cave-In and all those amazing Converge albums came out.
I didn't catch on that wave. It was much later. Like, and that's one of the things. Like, I wasn't around for the '80s hardcore movement either. So, like, that's why I wasn't into hardcore. Yeah. But sitting where I am now, I'm infatuated with it. Like, I've gone the spectrum of like genres in this little realm. So now I'm like full on into like weird black metal, post metal shit, but also hardcore. And I still love metalcore, but not like current day metalcore is hit or miss, but a lot of the metalcore I do love has a lot of new metal influence too, so there's that. But
for sure,
I just don't think and I might catch some shit for this, but I just don't think nothing will top that, like, golden era of metalcore, even though there are bands that, like you were saying, the first wave of metalcore is, you know, I listen to Dead Guy now, and I'm like, fuck, dude, or Botch, and these are bands that I didn't really listen to when I was younger in the scene, and even though I had a website way back in the day, before I started working with Lambgoat, and I had a website, and so I would get all these CDs sent to me physically. They would send physical CDs back in the day, not just digital advances. So, like, I got Botch and Hatebreed and Cave-In's, like, an Antenna album and stuff like that. But at the time, I was so, like, still in that nu metal crossover phase that was like, that's not my vibe. But as I got older, it became more my vibe, because then I could trace back the lineage of, like, the sounds of, like, why Norma Jean sounds so different, and then, like, you know, you go back and listen to Botch a couple years later, and you're like, oh fuck, that's why they sound like that.
Botch was one of the bands that, like, pushed me out of metalcore, or excuse me, out of nu metal. Was like, when I heard Botch, it was kind of like, whoa, like, Botch and Unearth and Zao were probably my three that really pushed me out of nu metal and into, you know, the more metalcore type stuff.
I agree. I mean, not I agree, but I can see that. I didn't listen to any of that stuff until late 2000s, probably. But it wasn't even, you know, I was listening to, like, what I consider golden era, you know, like, around that Bleeding Through. I was going to say Taking Back Sunday. I don't know why I said that, but Bleeding Through, Every Time I Die, all those, like, OC bands. And then, you know, there was just so much going on Trustkill and Ferret. Like, I was just, that was like my wheelhouse, right? So I was just stuck in there.
Trustkill and Victory were just huge at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Relapse Records, Hydra Head, Metal Blade. Mm-hmm. Those labels were just killing it. And they probably still are. If I'm being honest, I'm a little bit out of touch.
No, Hydra Head's not necessarily around anymore. There's a couple you've mentioned that aren't around because they were just so small, like, offshoots. But, I mean, Relapse obviously still around. Victory is still around. You know. And some of the labels have
got, like, sold or picked up by, like, didn't they get acquired by a major or something, I think?
It's happened. Trustkill got acquired. Ferret got acquired. I mean, they've all, yeah. But I've talked to Josh from Trustkill off and on for the last couple of years, just about any and everything. But he recently got all that catalog back or something like that. So I don't know I don't know if he's owner or anything like that, but I think it was Warner Music or something like that. They have an agreement to where he's basically, that's why you see all the Trustkill stuff going on, like Spotify and re-releasing vinyl and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so kudos for
that. Yeah, they had those iconic Poison the Well albums and everything from Bleeding Through, as I recall.
Yeah. Poison the Well's got a 20-year anniversary this year, too.
Oh, for
Opposite of December?
No, that already happened.
Oh, no, after that, that red, red and yellow.
Nope. You Come Before.
Oh, Tear from the Red.
You Come Before You.
Oh.
The one after Tear from the Red.
Shit.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Probably like their quote unquote breakout album, you know, where they actually like they had like a little couple ballads on there, or the one ballad.
Man, I don't think I knew what to do with that album the first time I heard it, because they got picked up by a major label, and I think they produced that album in Sweden, and they switched to, like, you know, Class AB amplifiers and vintage instruments, and they had like slide guitar.
Yeah.
And the drum sound was super organic with, you know, more room mic, and everything about the mix was just so different. And I think that I just still wanted the nostalgia of first wave Poison the Well. I have since gone back and listened to those records and thought, wow, these were great. You know, I wasn't ready for them at the time.
No, I feel that.
Wanted them to be what they were.
I feel that.
Yeah, I haven't revisited those in ages. Like, I was really into Opposite of December and Tear from the Red when those...
You sound just like every other dude on the message board, man.
Like, I know.
You don't want to go past those two albums. But I'll say this.
But you do, and I'll be the first to endorse it. Those other albums are great. There's some really amazing dynamic stuff in there. Just you have to leave the other stuff in the rearview mirror. Like, there's no. We were talking about Cave-In. If you love Until Your Heart Stops, then, you know, before you put in Antenna or Jupiter, just know that you're not getting the same band.
Right.
They're the same guys, but they had a different vision.
You know, if I probably heard Until the Heart Stops first, because Antenna was my first listen, right? Like, I got the CD in the mail from, I think it was it Jade Tree or Hydra or some, I don't know who that album.
Your Hydra band. Yeah.
Yeah. When I got it, I was like listening to it. And of course, you know, being like the, I don't know how old I was, 17, 18 year old kid running this stupid website, you know, I wanted to give it a fair shot, but I was like, I'm not feeling it. But if, who knows, maybe if it was a little heavier and, you know, more of like what I would originally, or what I would later on get into with, you know, Until Your Heart Stops and metalcore in general, it mm-hmm. might have just clicked yep. earlier and I might be a different person, but here we are. Here we are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your perspective starts where it starts. So, huge acknowledgement to bands that can cover that kind of ground and that have that amazing amount of range and
yeah.
musicality, you know, such maturity, such amazing musicians.
And to touch, piggyback off of that, bands like the Deftones, obviously, are big for that.
Yeah.
But the Deftones obviously inspired two of my favorite bands, which is Glassjaw and Poison the Well. So, like, when you look at those
for sure.
under that microscope of, like, as the Deftones influenced those bands, the Deftones never made the same album, right? And so, like, you can tell now that those yeah. two bands also followed that, you know, that mold or that style yeah. of how to do stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I stress to you both, go listen to You Come Before You, Versions, and The Tropic Rot from Poison the Well. If you liked them in those two albums, or those first two full lengths, you're going to go back and be like mind blown. I think Versions is my favorite Poison the Well album, and it's the most different than the five. Interesting.
What's that first track, that first badass track on Versions?
Letter Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that song rips.
Yeah.
They made a video for that. I remember seeing that video, and I didn't even recognize the band anymore at that point. I mean, it was like 2008. I was like, who the fuck is this awesome band? And then 30 seconds later, I realized what I was seeing. But prime example, you know, it was like rediscovering them for the first time all over again. It's a really great album.
Yeah, yeah.
Honorable mention, the Versions.
That they were one of the highlights of last year's Furnace Fest, just because, you know, they definitely don't play that often anymore. You know, they're one of those bands where they all live in different areas of the country and they all got a bunch of other stuff going on. And it's crazy just to see them, you know. And luckily enough I was like on stage while they're playing, and it's just like all this nostalgia shit just going on in the last 20 years in my head. And, you know, I'm just like, oh, what the fuck, dude, this is yeah, so yeah. awesome.
They have all the new songs, but people just want to hear nerdy.
True. But, you know, like, I've grown to, like, I don't hate the song, but it's like I could go without seeing it at a show, you know. I don't know. But.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yep. It's an encore song. I think Pariah played with them at Robot Mosh Fest.
Mm. Yeah, we did.
Where was that? Wisconsin?
That's in,
this was, you know, in their,
I think that was in Milwaukee. Yeah, that's a Milwaukee thing. Yep. Yeah, this would have been in 2008 or 9. Yeah, Russian Circles and Poison the Well were the two headliners. Mm. Yeah, and that's when we were pushing, I think, our second full-length Barnacle Cordius had just came out at that point in time. So we were, like, touring on that. Yeah.
Did those albums just come on Spotify? Right. Did you guys just get those on Spotify recently?
No, so they've been on Spotify for a while, but I switched our digital distributor over, so it had some sort of, like, weird flip-flop of, like, hey, they've got a new album, but...
Well, because I saw, because I was, you know, when I do my research and stuff like that, I noticed that, like, the upload date for some of those albums were, like, recent, so I was like, oh, maybe... Because, again, like, you know, Josh has been uploading the Truskill bands to Spotify and labels... I think, like, Hydra Head is one of those labels that kind of went offline on Spotify for a little while until someone else uploaded and picked it up. But I was just curious.
Yeah, and honestly, we weren't very good about promoting our band during those hibernating years. And I think we just let social media sleep for, like, literal years on end. And this is when Spotify and Gram and all of the social media as we know it today was coming of age. So, I mean, we're literally trying to pump it up now. Which is, you know, it's never too late. But, I mean, we were asleep at the wheel, you know, during those hibernation years.
Yeah.
So that's why we're anxious to get content out there and to be active and to, you know, let people know we are doing it. and we're doing it because we want to. You know, we're doing it on our own and then releasing it independently.
Yeah.
And it's a different animal.
And I think it's a good, you know, good way to prolong the exposure as much as you can, right? So.
Yeah, no doubt.
So
I'll even say during some of these kind of dormant years for Pariah, you know, John and I both obviously went on and played in several other bands, and I think that experience of playing with other people and kind of doing different types of songwriting has really contributed a lot to when we came back to working together on Pariah stuff too. You know,
I was going to ask what you know because there's such a big gap between Pariah and then and today. I was going to ask what's been going on for you guys, whether it's musically or personally, because obviously, like, you moved to LA and now, you know, John, you live in the other side of the country in Connecticut. So, you know, I'm just curious as to what's been going on in the past, you know, over a decade. Well,
John and I did have another collaboration over COVID, so I'll take this time to plug that.
Let's go.
So I'm sure you're familiar with the movie Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yep.
Okay, so to give you like kind of the backstory, like I saw a very short clip of that when I was like 6 years old when it was on TV. I saw the scene where the shadow puppet comes, turns into a T-Rex and eats the crowd of people, and I was just like absolutely terrified. And I had no idea what that movie was. Like for years and years and years, I like would sometimes bring it up to people and people are just like, what are you talking about? And then when I was in high school, I worked at Hollywood Video, and which for people that don't know, that was like Blockbuster.
You had to go and physically rent the movie.
Yeah, you have to go to a place. And so I was describing, I was probably 17, 18 years old, describing that movie to somebody, and he's like, oh yeah, that's Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And I was like, I have to see it. I have to see if it's as terrifying as I remember. So,
it wasn't,
you know,
was it?
I ordered it.
It was goofy. It was so goofy. It was so goofy. Yeah. You're like, why was I scared?
Exactly. And then I was like, oh man, this theme song's super cool. So then I had to go and special order the soundtrack from like Sam Goody or Suncoast or whatever, because you couldn't just find it.
Again, you'd have to go to the store and buy physical copies of CDs at a music store.
And then wait like 4 weeks.
This is probably before Napster.
Oh yeah.
100%. 100% before Napster. So anyway, I loved that theme song that the Dickies did. So for years, I was just like, one of these days, I'm going to cover that song. And during the pandemic, I was like, well, now I've got the time. So, you know, and I've got like kind of the right friends to do it. So in a very disjointed effort, I kind of put together that whole thing, recorded with a drummer out here, sent the tracks to John. John recorded guitar in Omaha, obviously did the bass here, and then this the singer is out here too. We kind of just put together this like one-off thing. The band name is The Man from Alphabet, and recorded that song The Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and then I wrote like a kind of a storyline for a music video that, you know, totally incorporates the clowns and all this stuff, and was able to lock down a location, and we shot like a pretty cool music video for it. That's out on YouTube. I think at this point it's somewhere around 550,000 views on it. So
oh, wow.
people are liking it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thanks. So that's the long way of me plugging that. I like telling that backstory though, because I think it's like kind of interesting. It's like, oh, this was something I wanted to do for like, you know, decades, and COVID finally gave me time to do that project. So.
Something was born from trauma as a child, and then when other trauma started happening, you were like, fuck it, now let's bring that trauma to light.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But
it was super fun, and you know, super, it was great to get to work with John again after, you know, such a long period of time of not doing anything together and getting together with my buddies, you know.
Was that kind of the catalyst to start writing the newer the new Pariah stuff, or were you already doing that and then did the Killer Clown stuff?
I think this was simultaneous, Dustin, don't you think?
I
don't exactly remember.
I feel like you came to me with the Pariah stuff pretty shortly after that, but I really can't remember.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. Like I said, it's all a blur. This is all this was COVID era, you know, when we started these projects.
All the days ran together.
What was cool about the Killer Clowns, that was recorded and really produced, I guess I was in Nebraska at the time, but Dustin put together the band, and it was amazing. Everybody was super pro, and they just sent me tracks. I recorded it in Omaha with an engineer named Jim Homan, who I pretty much entrust with tracking everything that I do whenever possible. And then it was sent to Pete Riccio out of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
He's a guy that...
Sorry, go ahead.
We kind of came up with him because there's these great sounding Havoc records. I think it's their original release, or their, I think Time Is Up, I think that's the name of the release, but I love the way that album sounds. So I looked up who did it. I found this guy Pete. He was super cool and totally available, and he was originally on deck to mix the prior record. We ended up doing that in-house just because we had such a great experience with Jim. But to cross back over, he mixed and mastered that Killer Clown song, and I mean, it sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up.
I remember John was like, oh yeah, and he plays in some video game band too, and I was like, well, I love video game cover bands, and when he told me it was like a metal video game thing, I was like, dude, is it Vomitron? And it is. He is Vomitron. Like, nice. He does all of it.
Nice.
If you haven't heard that, it is like, it is pretty awesome if you're into like that nerdy video game cover stuff, and then it's like metal versions of it. You know? And
it's funny you bring up like that video game Nintendo core sound, because like lately, I've admittedly just been like tapping back into Horse the Band. I hadn't really like paid much attention to that band in like maybe like a decade plus, but like, and again, I wasn't super big. I shouldn't say I wasn't a super big fan. I was a super big fan of Ard Borlax, but after that, I kind of like started just to kind of like die off of like paying attention to them. But I respected them so much because they did that like weird 3-4 month like world tour back in the day, and they all did it like DIY booked themselves, and like obviously like lost a lot of money and stuff. But like I was like, damn, that is so fucking cool they did that. And yeah, that's it. I'm getting back into them, you know what I mean?
Check them out.
I remember.
Hey boys, I'll be right back. I'm gonna go take a pee break real quick. Okay.
Go for it.
Cool. I actually remember that. I don't remember the band that well. Like, I never got really into them, but I do remember them like being like one of the only metalcore bands that had synthesizers in them. Besides, like, you know, Bleeding Through kind of had it more as more of a texture, and Horse the Band, it was more like an upfront, like, lead instrument.
8-bit type sound instead of, like, you know, like, calm, like, backing, like, just like...
Yes.
Or organ, or organ sound. It was more like just fucked 8-bit noises all the time. And it helped that Napoleon Dynamite came out around that same timeline, and Eric, the keyboardist, was like identical looking to like almost John Heder. So like they could have been like doppelgangers back in the day, you know? And then they were, I mean, those guys were so cool too. We got, around that same year we played with you, I think before that we had gone on like a small tour with them. And I don't want to say tour, like I just annoyed Eric enough via email for him to be like, yeah, if you can contact the venues and the promoters and you guys can get on the tour or on those shows, then yeah, you're more than welcome.
Oh, gotcha.
And so I just hounded everybody. And so they had 7 Florida dates on this big tour, and we got on 5 of them. And
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Good for you.
But they were so cool. They're like, you know, and they were just really nice dudes and funny guys. And yeah, I was watching their, I like went back and downloaded, or not downloaded, I found on YouTube, they have this, the Earth Tour DVD, which is like, their documentation of that giant world tour. So I was watching that, and it was just bringing back a bunch of memories. Yeah,
I bet that's cool to see something that from that era so heavily documented.
Oh, it's like, it's 7 hours long or some wild shit like that. It's like 6 DVDs. Wow. Yeah, you can look it up on YouTube. It's available.
Oh, I have to look that up. I do remember us, John. We're talking about Horse the Band. I remember us playing with them one time, and you know, this was also in an era where you couldn't just go and look up to hear what a band sounds like. So I just remember it being a thing where it was like, it was kind of like you'd see their shirts around at shows and people were talking about them all the time. Like, there was a lot of hype around them. And I remember playing some, you know, one of those all day long festival things. I have no idea where it was, but I just remember that we were playing on the stage that all the bands had to play on was so awkwardly tall. It was like, you know, where like, if you're in the front row, you have to just crank your neck all the way up to see the bands. It was something like, you know, like 15, 20 feet high. I was like, what? Why did they do this? So dumb. I mean, I might be exaggerating on the height, but I just remember it being so awkwardly bizarre how tall the stage was at that point. But that's my memory of Horse the Band. That's another one I'll have to go back and revisit because, I'd like to check it out. I do that sometimes, go down these old rabbit holes of just like, I wonder what I would think of this band now if that I listened to it.
A lot of bands that I didn't. Well, again,
you just kind of miss.
We came from a different time, you know what I'm saying? So like, the young kids today don't really understand it. You weren't allowed to like a lot of stuff back in the day. You know, there was a lot of
very true.
There's a lot of gatekeeping going on, and which, for better or for worse, I don't necessarily know if I hated it then or hated it. The lack of it now, I don't necessarily know what I prefer, but you know, when you were in the hardcore scene, that's why I listen to nu metal in private and not with anybody else, because it's like,
oh, I mean, shit, I don't think you could admit to liking Foo Fighters
anything
that came from like the alternative rock era
or emo.
I mean, I remember a time I mean, we grew up in Omaha and there was this huge Midwest quote-unquote emo movement going on with Saddle Creek Records, and it was a huge thing, and there was just a crazy amount of separation. Now I feel kind of stupid for missing out on all of that, because I think it was kind of historic, and I mean, it definitely was, and the music was actually great. I just completely slept on it because I think in some way I felt like I wasn't allowed to enjoy it.
Exactly. I always felt pressured like that. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years after that, you start seeing kids in the pit with Slipknot shirts and you're like, what's going on?
I think that was the first band that was the catalyst, at least where we came from, was suddenly it became okay to like Slipknot. Yeah. Very, very suddenly. And then it was like, well, why not Machine Head? Why not Pantera? And then it just kind of worked itself out naturally, I suppose.
Yeah.
But gatekeeping is, that's how I would describe it. It was I mean, these days you're allowed to like anything, and for better or worse, you know.
Do you think that do you think it is for the better or for the worse? Honestly. Do you
cuz like as a musician,
I'm sorry, I go back and forth on the gatekeeping thing because clearly it served a purpose you know, back in the day, and you know, it is what it is, but now sometimes it's like a free-for-all on any and everything, and like,
I think that people are disingenuous about it sometimes. I think they're trying to be ironic and they're claiming, and maybe I'm just being a pessimistic asshole, but I think the gatekeeping thing during my era or our era was, you know, one-dimensional, and you were supposed to like pick a side, and now I wonder if, you know, people's playlists aren't more or less to impress you with, you know, how eclectic their listening is.
Yeah,
or maybe I'm just jealous because mine's not that eclectic. I don't know.
Mine's eclectic, but not in a cool way.
Mine's not either. I would never share my Spotify playlist in public. I would get lynched.
Oh, I've definitely done that. I'd definitely do that. There's a lot of rap. My playlist too, which is, you know, it is what it is. But
I mean, there's no wrong answer. It's your personal playlist. I mean, you need music to work, music to work out, music to relax. Doesn't matter, you know, whatever speaks to you.
Yeah.
So as a musician and as a player, you know, me discovering different types of guitar playing has been amazing. It's reinvigorated me in more ways than I can count. I have utmost appreciation for country music guitar. I've been at times obsessed with it over the last couple of years. Am I an advocate for country music? I don't know. I definitely feel way differently about it than I did 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people should be allowed to feel open to liking different kinds of music, whether or not it's cool. And where those barriers are now, I don't know, because I'm not in touch with the teenage generation. I just remember how it was when I was that age, and it was very much pick a side or get run over.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's kind of how it was, too. And I, like, to touch base on what we were talking about earlier, I have since also gone back and listened to a lot of bands that I was like, that band is lame. I'm not going to even fuck with that. You know, like, so I've gone back and listened to a lot of stuff, and I'm like, damn, you know, like, fuck, this band's not even around anymore.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So,
oh, yeah.
Win some, lose some, I guess.
I think, I was kind of like in a similar boat with what you were saying. It was like,
dude. It was the era.
Yeah. You didn't actively say that you were listening to a lot of certain bands that were outside of like what was acceptable. But I think after I moved out to LA and I was just like, I just want to play bass. I'll play whatever. I started like actually for the first time having like more of an appreciation for like pop music and other genres that I had kind of snubbed in the past, just because I was like, I just want to play and like I'll kind of do whatever. And once you start like learning and dissecting a lot of those songs, you start to like find things you like about them, you know?
Yeah. Not to always harp on.
I think you quickly realize you're not married to the genre, you're married to your instrument. And if you just want to play the thing, you'll do it.
Yeah. And to piggyback off the bass, like wanting to play bass in different styles, like, and not to harp on Glassjaw a million times, but that's just what I do. Our Color Green, like the bass on Our Color Green, the bass on Coloring Book, and going forward for stuff like that, I was like, it stood out so much to me that I started paying more attention to bass in general. And then I was Then I was like, oh yeah, bass is funky as shit, like all the time. But again, like when you grow up in the hardcore metal world, not a lot of funky bass lines going on. You know what I mean? It's like, just a backer for maybe some bass drums or some low end guitar stuff. So, you know, Glassjaw opened me up to like a bunch of like jam band stuff in a way. You know, like I'd start listening to like Dave Matthews and stuff like that, which I'm probably gonna get flamed for that. But
yeah, you will.
Yeah. It's not 2000. Yeah, you know,
they have that rhythm section, man. Absolutely, that relationship between the drummer and the bass player, pretty incredible. Yeah. No doubt.
To back something that you were saying earlier, John, about kind of like missing out on eras too, is like with Omaha and the Saddle Creek thing. Like one band I really snoozed on, regrettably, is the Faint. Like. Now they're like,
oh yeah,
I listened to them so much over the last 10 years, you know, since I no longer live in Omaha. And every time they come out here, I go and see them play. And I'm just like, man, this band is, you know, like past their peak in popularity, but their live shows are still so great. The songs like age really well. Like that band is so underrated and underappreciated, you know. And I totally regret not going and seeing them in Omaha more often. I saw them once in Omaha, and I don't know, for whatever reason, I was kind of like, oh yeah, well that was better than I thought, but you know.
Yeah.
Like I did.
They weren't even part of the rock genre, you know, so they were in a different stratosphere.
Weren't they like I don't want to say like a goth night dance band, like a synthesizer kind of.
Yeah, totally.
I hadn't heard that name in forever.
Definitely. You would say Britpop, synthpop,
yes.
Goth. I mean, none of those adjectives are wrong. They are very one of a kind and extremely skilled. And anybody from Omaha takes a lot of pride knowing that they're from their hometown. Because people usually guess that band is from somewhere in Europe. Yeah. Because that's how they sound.
Well, and on top of that, they are like very DIY. So like it makes me respect the band even more knowing like, oh yeah, they program their own light shows. They do all their own art, all their own video stuff. Now that they're not on Saddle Creek, I think they're just a completely independent band and still, you know, able to play big festivals and all this stuff. And it's like, those guys are through DIY. And for a while, they owned a building in Omaha that had their recording studio because they record all their own albums themselves, engineer them themselves, and had their rehearsal space in there. And Yeah, Enamel. I recorded there with my post-rock band, The Answer Team, and so I got to see the place at that point in time. And yeah, man, I'm just I am so sincerely impressed with like everything around that band. I really am.
Yeah.
And I regretfully, like I said, snoozed on them in kind of their peak.
Yeah. Touching base with what you kind of said, like the gimmicky thing, that's where I kind of that's where I think gatekeeping should be at. Like, no gimmicks, bro.
Oh yeah.
Like the DIY, no gimmick. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I'll go on and I'll catch shit for this probably too, but like a COVID band that popped up out of nowhere was like the Linda Lindas, you know? Have you heard of that band? They're like,
no.
They're like the young Asian girls. They're like teenager Asian girls. They came out they came out with this song called Racist Sexist Boy, which is very topical, you know, at the time. And they're all like, yeah. At the time, they're a California band. That might be in LA. So you might be able to check them out, Dustin. But they were like, yeah, kind of like.
It sounds LA AF, what you're describing.
They recorded this video in like a library or something like that. And it was the Sexist Racist Boy video or some shit. And like, I'm watching it going like, it's the music's not blowing me away, clearly, obviously. But like, I'm like, you're like 16 years old. What's going on here? You know what I mean? Like what's the backstory here? And then, you know, you find out that like, oh, it's the daughter of like some people at Epitaph or something like that. And
the other. Right.
Oh yeah.
And you know, but that's the kind of stuff where like, good for them for having the ability and the chance to do that. But for me, that's where I think a little gatekeeping should come in and be like, hey guys, just so everyone's aware, this is really what's going on.
You know? This is how they got their opportunity. Let's do this.
There were no dues paid here. This was,
and I'm not trying to single out the Linda Lindas. There's a fuckload of those bands out there, even in our world. Oh, so
since forever, no doubt.
Yeah.
Get that pro bono opportunity.
What
are you gonna do?
You know, but even when you get those opportunities, that it's like you still have to have music that's gonna be either good or catchy or marketable or something. There's still got to be something to it, even if you get those opportunities. Like,
yeah, but some of those opportunities may be opportunities may be, hey, we have this song written for you already.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. How those labels.
That's very, very, very fair. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I mean, the early visibility is kind of the gimme, but you have to maintain the attention. So
yeah.
The product has to be at least good enough to do that.
You could look at somebody like a prime example would be Billy Ray Cyrus's kids. Obviously, Miley Cyrus is hugely successful, and her brother was in a band.
Metro Station.
Yeah, Metro Station. They just kind of, I mean, as far as I know, if I'm totally wrong, please correct me, but I think they just kind of like quick spark, flash in the pan, and I think they're, you know, they've been gone for.
You're not wrong. They might like come back and do that emo festival or something. You know what I mean? Like they might play shows or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, they had that one song, Shake It. I remember because when we weren't allowed to listen to all that stuff, the girls we were dating or the girls we were around were listening to that stuff.
That's exactly how I know them. Yeah. That's exactly right.
It was in our wheelhouse. We just were like, nope, can't like that. Don't listen to that. Taking Back Sunday is not cool. I can't listen to Taking Back Sunday. But, you know, then you get older and it's like, I love Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah. I think Miley Cyrus' new video thing came out on Friday. So she probably did that just to thwart Pariah's release of Venerate because they came out on the same day.
She heard about it. She was like, fuck these dudes.
Sure, it was intentional on her.
Perfect.
John and I saw her when we were hiking in Los Angeles, one of the first times you visited out here, right? When we were in Malibu.
No, I was gonna run that by you because I'm 99% sure that was her.
Yeah, that was definitely her. That was definitely her.
She had two.
And before that, we ran into.
Go ahead.
Two bodyguards. She had two bodyguards and a big dog. I want to say it was like a pit bull something.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she was more clothed than you used to seeing her though, so that's why it was hard for you to. She had more clothing on than you.
I just remember she was like taller than I expected her to be. She was super fit and she had these like huge bodyguards running on each side of her. I would assume they were bodyguards. This was kind of like in her peak era. And I think we just kind of like nodded and said hi and she acknowledged us and gave us like a quick smile and I'm out of here. And then from then on, from that point on, it's kind of like a dude passing the nod test. And I call the nod test is if you meet a guy who's of some level of fame or whatever, and you give him a nod or a handshake or the most basic of acknowledgments, and they reciprocate it, then they're pretty much okay by me from that point on. So I remember I was like, okay, well, the nod test for Miley Cyrus is we're just going to say hi or smile or whatever. And if she acknowledges, she's cool. If she doesn't, she's stuffed up and fuck her. Well, she definitely acknowledged us. So from that point on, I like instantly became an advocate for her.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm 99.9% sure that was her.
I mean, she's fairly talented. Obviously, she comes from a musical, household and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Ray and everything. And, you know, honestly, when she was on, she appeared on Joe Rogan's podcast, too. And she had a very interesting episode. Again, that's why I like to humanize the artist with the audience, because I find that when I find out things from people that I only see on, you know, screen or in a live atmosphere or read about, I don't necessarily, you know, you have this preset idea of who that person is, but then you find out like, oh, they're kind of like me, or they have the same interests as me, or like, oh, they're just weird. They're a weird person. And, you know, so like, yeah, I got into it because she did some like big self-help like thing where she like started like really getting into like how the mind works, and of course like I was like, that's interesting, and then I started like I fucking started reading the book she had mentioned on the podcast or whatever, and
oh wow,
yeah, so it's cool. Like I like, you know, whereas like I am somewhat pro gatekeeping, there's barriers to be broken every now and then, you know.
Sure. She had some whole like non-profit type thing. I don't remember what it was exactly about, but I remember the logo for it was just kind of this yellow smiley face thing, and it was something to do, if I recall correctly, something to do with like advocating for women's rights and something to do with like, you know, approaching things like depression and mental illness, confronting them, I should say, not approaching them, in a healthy way and stuff like that. But my memory can be a little foggy sometimes.
No, you're pretty much on there, because she dealt with a lot of like obviously drug abuse stuff and just like child fame, because she was famous from like almost the jump, you know. So
yeah, since she was a kid, yeah. I got my niece who's 23 now. When she was a little kid, she was really into the Hannah Montana stuff. Yeah. So at one point in time, I bought her like a Hannah Montana guitar and was like, you know, because I was like, hey, maybe this will be an opportunity to get her into, like, you know, wanting to play guitar and rock music. But it wasn't. But
no, didn't pan out.
Anyway, I digress. Yeah, so your point, she's been a big star. She's been famous her whole life, you know, since she was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't bode well for a lot of people.
Mentally. Yeah,
know,
it doesn't.
You know, yeah, mentally, that's what I mean. Like, you know, Conan O'Brien kind of says, like, you know, that to a certain extent, like child fame should almost be like an illegal thing, because it's almost the equivalent of giving kids drugs, and just the environment that they're in is so crazy, you know.
It also could be somewhat abusive to it.
Yeah, the pressure and the isolation. And I don't want to say they all turn out like Michael Jackson, but that story just never seems to end well.
Well, there's not a lot of child stars that have gone off to be like complete perfect humans that are liked by everybody, you know. So it's, I think, like, even Shia, you know, Shia LaBeouf or whatever, he's had his ups and downs. And from the exterior for a while, he looked like he kept it together for a while. But then, you know.
I felt like he just started airing it out.
Yeah, no hate to him. I love Shia as a human person. You know, like, I don't watch all his movies, but he seems like a pretty decent guy. But there's some stories out there that aren't necessarily decent about him, so.
Yeah.
Enough.
Well, boys, we've gone like an hour and a half, which is pretty long for the pod, so I've got news to post, unfortunately, for the rest of the day. So, but I greatly appreciate you boys hopping on, and I do like that all these bands from two decades ago are storming back. So I hope to see you guys do a couple more things, obviously, like shows, tours, stuff like that. You know, and I'm interested to see
lots more to come.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with the rest of the EP and how that sounds.
Thank you so much. And thanks again for, you know, supporting Pariah over all these years, man. So
I have to admit, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
wasn't me. I don't know if you guys know or anything like that, but I joined Lamb Goat in about 2018, 2019 just to do the podcast.
Oh, okay.
And then Alex, I had a conversation with Alex about a year and a half ago and acquired it from him. So now it's me. But, you know, I was a longtime visitor for the website because, like, you know, I would steal news from here and the PRP because I was a new metal kid. And, you know, I would just post about bands that I liked. And then that's how I got into it. But, yeah, I have a very big affinity for Lamb Goat, obviously, clearly. And that's why I do what I do. But, hey, if you guys want to stick around for 3 seconds after we end this, that'd be great.
Sure.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, we'll end it here then. Boys, I thank you very much. If you haven't checked out Venerate, you can do so. It's on Spotify, anywhere like that. I'm sure you have a Bandcamp, correct, where you can purchase it?
That's correct.
Yep, do that. What's the socials?
New video on YouTube.
New video. What are the socials, too? Because you guys, you know, are new to the social media game.
Yeah, Instagram, we are Pariah the Band. And Facebook, I think, is Pariah. It's just Pariah, but I think the thing is Pariah Music, like the URL.
Yeah.
You can basically find all our links on pariahmusic.com.
Cool. And they'll be in the description of this podcast as well, so check it out. But yeah, thanks a lot, guys, and best of luck for the remaining remaining singles on the EP, and hopefully we'll see you soon in person.
Great. Thanks so much for having us.
Always.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
It is now 2024, and the choice is up to you. Do you listen to good podcasts, or do you listen to bad ones? Well, we've got a suggestion for you. How about you listen to a good podcast for the first time in your miserable life? I can think of one. Overnight Drive. Going strong. 11 years now. The podcast about nothing. Your favorite podcast's favorite podcast. Do you enjoy nothing? So do we. Why don't you come over and check it out and stop listening to other podcasts? Thank you.